Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Mark Juergensmeyer, who's the director of the Orphalia Center for Global and International Studies, professor of sociology and professor of religious studies at the University of California, Santa Barbara. He's an expert on religious violence, conflict resolution, and South Asian religion and politics, and has published more than 200 articles and 20 books, including the recently released Global Rebellion, Religious Challenges to the Secular State. His widely read Terror in the Mind of God is at the Global Rise of Religious Violence is based on interviews with religious activists around the world, including individuals convicted of the 1993 World Trade Center bombing, leaders of Hamas, and abortion clinic bombers in the United States. Welcome to Background Briefing, Mark Juergensmeyer.
My pleasure.
And although Christian terrorism is certainly not a phenomenon that's publicized very much, it's a very real phenomenon. Most of our obsession is about Islamic terrorism, Muslim terrorists. You hear about it constantly in the news and in the movies and on television. So am I correct in suggesting that the phenomenon of Christian terrorism is somewhat underreported?
Yeah, I think that's right. Although, you know, it's a paradox that there are far more acts of Christian terrorism on American soil than Muslim terrorism or by any other group. There have been scores of incidents of Christian terrorism, and since Barack Obama was inaugurated as president, unfortunately, the number have risen, everything from suicide attacks to Christian militia groups planning armed rebellion to plots to assassinate the president's life, and some of them are supported by broad Christian ideologies like those associated with the Christian Identity Movement or Christian Reconstruction that imagines a Christian-based kind of coup d'etat, a Christian rebellion, Christian revolution in America. And I've talked with people who said, you know, we shouldn't be following the Constitution. We should believe in the Bible. We should have laws based solely on the Bible. They're kind of, you know, like Christian Ayatollahs.
So do they see that? Do they see the irony that the religious right in America is, you know, fighting religious fascism abroad, but in many ways the Republican Party's in bed with them at home?
Yeah, it's funny people don't make those connections when they're closely related to it. Although, one of the guys I talked with, an abortion clinic bomber on the East Coast, who was the likely author of the Army of God manual, and a friend of people convicted of bombing abortion clinics in Florida, and also a supporter of the guy who bombed the clinic and killed the Dr. Tiller in Kansas, told me that he had a certain admiration for the Ayatollah Khomeini, because at least they were able to create a religious state in the way that he would like to do so in the United States. So at least some of them recognize that there are more parallels than others would be willing to admit.
Well, even the mainstream televangelists like Falwell, the late Falwell, and Pat Robinson and Hagee and others are open theocrats. I mean, there's a new Christian extremist constitution that's been written by the Liberty Council. That's a branch of Jerry Falwell's Liberty University, the Declaration of American Values, a 10-point plan to recreate the United States of America into a Christian version of Sharia law, in effect.
So some of these are influenced by the Christian Reconstruction movement that has its base in Tyler, Texas, and the Institute of Christian Economics there that actually developed a whole plan for kind of recreating or reconstructing American society along Christian lines. And they base their ideology in John Calvin, in solid Christian tradition, after all. John Calvin, one of the great reformers, tried to create a theocratic state. He created his own city, which today we recognize as Geneva, Switzerland, as being a Christian theocracy. Now, it isn't a Christian theocracy today, and that kind of Calvinism has pretty much disappeared. But it was certainly part of a certain branch of some of the founding elements of America, the Puritans of Plymouth Rock. They were extreme Calvinists. So there is an American kind of fringe religious tradition of a kind of extremist theocratic politics.
Well, the theocratic right, a Christian right here, in terms of the Liberty Council's constitution, also include, apart from their hatred of gays and pornography and all of that stuff, they also talk about the individual right to own, possess, and use firearms as central to the preservation of peace and liberty. Now, this fellow who shot up the Sikh temple and killed six people and wounded three others and gravely wounded a policeman, he was in a state that have just only in the last year or so have enabled citizens to carry concealed firearms without a permit. So
Right. It's
just, I can't help making the connection. I mean, it seems as clear as day that if you have this lethal combination of accessible, available firearms that you can hide, and the fact that you have uneducated people susceptible to the kind of anti-Muslim bigotry that is often heard on Fox News and is being propagated by some of our congressional members like Michelle Bachmann, who's recently accused Hillary Clinton's assistant of being a secret agent of the Muslim Brotherhood, etc. Don't you think that's a lethal combination?
It's a very lethal combination, and it may be true that Wade Michael Page was not a very sophisticated character himself, and he may not have had many ideological links to these organizations, not really known much about their ideas or their ideas of Christian theocracy and so forth. But the background noise of kind of hate radio speech and this kind of extremist religio-political talk certainly, I think, emboldens a certain image of the world at war, the great confrontation, a battle between good and evil and right and wrong and religion and irreligion, for which people like Page, admittedly a marginal kind of sad loner, a loser in most people's eyes, somebody who tried to be a soldier from 92 to 98. He was a failure at that. He was kicked out of the army for misconduct. God knows what that was. And ever since, he's bounced from place to place, never really had much of a responsible job, picking up these gigs with a skinhead punk band and trying to relive or recreate a kind of glory that he never really had in the military by being a part of an imagined war, a great conflict. I mean, just think how exhilarating that would be to think that you were a part of this adventure, this battle, this war that most people don't know about it, but you know that there is a battle going on, that you have been selected, or you think you've been selected to be, you know, play this critical, pivotal role instead of shot people, and suddenly they'll be aware that you're not the stupid loser that everybody thinks you are, that you're really a glorified soldier in this great war, and you know it's a great war because you hear all this language on extremist right-wing radio or the kind of hate talk shows and their internet sites this guy was privileged to. So that's part of that's the audience, that's the background, that's the template, that's the base for which people like this can get a sense of personal satisfaction and pride by entering into that cosmic war as a warrior that's going to make their name. That's the sad fact of it. They may not be sophisticated ideologues, but that template of cosmic war, of cultural war, certainly fuels the fires that makes people like this do what they do.
Well, he certainly probably thought he was at war, but he hit the wrong target, didn't he? He thought he was killing Muslims, and he killed six instead. Mark Jurgensmeyer, again, director of the Orfelia Center for Global and International Studies, professor of sociology and professor of religious studies at the University of California in Santa Barbara. He's the author of the just-released Global Rebellion, Religious Challenges to the Secular State, and the widely read bestseller Terror in the Mind of God, The Global Rise of Religious Violence, which is based on interviews with religious activists around the world, including individuals convicted of the 1993 World Trade Center bombing, leaders of Hamas, and abortion clinic bombers in the United States. But just to follow up on what you said, I wanted to talk more about the research you've done in a minute, but the notion that this guy's a loser, I mean, wasn't Hitler a loser? Wasn't all of that weird collection of drug addicts and Goebbels and Goering, what a bunch of disreputable misfits they all were, just a bunch of losers and thugs. I mean, that was the whole point of Bertolt Brecht's famous plays, The Resistible Rise of Arturo Huy, which portrayed Hitler as a small-time protection racketeer in the Chicago fruit markets trying to grab the cauliflower concession. He deliberately brought him down to this level because history judges these tyrants by the millions of bodies they pile up, but they don't judge them as human beings in terms of their smallness, pettiness. Stalin was another example. Somehow that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, and then maybe there's probably no great motivator than the sense of humiliation. A sense of just not making it and not being, not being the person you want to be, even your own eyes, much less other people's eyes, and then wanting to create like a fantastic world in which you are somebody. I mean, in some ways, that's the great appeal of computer games. That's the great appeal of these kind of fantastic World of Warcraft 3 or whatever it is that so excites junior high school boys who are certainly people who are kind of betwixt and between and kind of lost in the sea and feel marginalized and humiliated and shamed all the time, and they can be somebody when they join this game. And the same is true of some of the figures you're talking about who imagine a great war, and in the case of Hitler, are actually able to pull it off. That's even scarier. But the terrorist acts are in some ways the same kind of thing. It's another kind of imagined war. It's just that we don't see the world at war in quite the way they see it until they do something, until they blow up the World Trade Center. And then suddenly, whoa, you can't hide from that. You got to admit that somebody sees this world as a world at war. And they're pretty effective, at least for the moment, in claiming your attention and in stating their view of the world and impressing it on us. But usually it's just for the moment, and then it dies away, unless, of course, you build a whole foreign policy around a war on terror, in which case you accept that worldview as a basis of foreign policy, which is probably the wackiest thing that's ever been done in recent history. But ordinarily, sensible governance and states people realize that these are imagined wars and should be diffused and marginalized in the same way that they emerged by trying to nab those people who are perpetrators and not glorify them by glorifying their ideology as a vaunted global war on terrorism.
Well, but it seems to me that the global war on terror has almost entirely backfired in the sense that, first of all, Bin Laden's finished. He's gone, and most of them, there's only a handful of them left. During the Cold War, in the height of the Cold War was when we had the House of Un-American Activities here in the United States, where we imitated the Stalin purge trials, asking the same question, are you not a communist? So to some extent, we're imitating our nemesis here, even though they're all but vanquished, the Al-Qaeda. The growth of Christian fundamentalism in the U.S. military is breathtaking. There's a Mikey Weinstein has a group that watches, I think it's called the Military Freedom Foundation or something. That do you know about them?
Yeah. You know, it is an astounding thing.
And their special forces are just permeated by these crusader types. I mean, it's really so. You know, our military, in many ways, has turned into a kind of crusader camp.
Well, it's certainly the kind of mentality that they want to indoctrinate the military personnel with. So, and of course, it has a certain kind of effectiveness. If people feel that they're in a great mission and a great cause, then maybe they'll respond more, lively as soldiers. But of course, armies are always instruments. They're instruments of public policy. And so there's a difference between that and the kind of, the rogue bands of terrorists or individual terrorists like Wade Clark Page, Wade Michael Page, who thinks of themselves as soldiers and then carry out their acts. They're not restricted by military commands or...
Of course. I mean, I don't mean to...
Whatever they want to.
Sure, I don't mean to compare... there's the special forces who actually got bin Laden. I'm sure a lot of them are very fundamentalist Christians, but there's certainly no comparison to these kind of abortion bombers this character in Wisconsin.
Wisconsin is his own general. That is, he is able to make his own kind of command decisions and make an attack, and of course that's why it's so exhilarating for him, and why it would be exhilarating for a former military, especially somebody like him who was never really, much in the military. But even Timothy McVeigh, who everybody recognized as a kind of hotshot in terms of killing people and tearing up the desert with automatic weapon fire, when he got out, felt that he missed the war. The war was gone, that he needed to somehow recreate a war where he had importance, he had power, maybe even more power and more glory than he had in the Gulf War and the imagined war that led to the bombing of the World Trade, the Oklahoma City Federal Building. It's funny I say World Trade Center because the Al Qaeda actions are exactly the same. I mean, the jihadis are also swept up in their imagined war, just like the Christian terrorists are. And how odd it is that we are quite willing to call the jihadis Muslim terrorists, but more reluctant to call the very same kind of people, the same kind of crazy cosmic war religious confrontation mentality on the Christian side. We're reluctant to call them Christian terrorists. They are. I mean, they are. If Bin Laden is a Muslim terrorist, then, Page is a Christian terrorist. Didn't think McVeigh is a Christian terrorist.
Well, I recall, doing some research on Pat Tillman, who was killed by friendly fire, and he, of course, he had a huge run-in with the Christian fundamentalist crusaders, if you will, within the ranks of the Rangers and the Special Forces.
Yeah, he was not one of them. He was really quite a...
He was different.
Kind of guy.
That's why, anyway, just to go in the last few minutes here, Mark, I wanted to get a sense from you, since you've interviewed some of the Hamas terrorist bombers and the those convicted of the 1993 World Trade Center bombing. You've also interviewed abortion clinic bombers here in the United States. What is the difference between a Christian terrorist and a Muslim terrorist, from based upon the interviews of the people that on both sides of that divide?
Well, aside from the fact that one a Christian, the other Muslim, not a lot. I mean, the kind of imagined warfare of jihadi sort, or the imagined warfare of Aum Shinrikyo, the Buddhist activists in Japan, or some of the terrorists during the Khalistani movement in the 1980s, are the Jewish extremist zealots on the West Bank. It's a very similar kind of imagined war with imagined role for the activists to sort of vindicate their own sense of shame, their own shortcomings, their own humiliation in a great blaze of glory. That's really very common. There are also militant terrorist acts that are undertaken for more strategic purposes within a more real kind of confrontation. And maybe you could say that some of the Hamas activities have a more strategic role than that. But in many cases, and even in some of the Hamas cases, it's a symbolic act of a terrorist act as a blazing symbol of imagined warfare that really animates and involves the people who are connected with them.
But isn't there a kind of moral free ride in this, on both with the Christians who believe that they're in shooting an abortion provider or blowing up a clinic, they're actually saving lives?
Oh,
and in the case of Bin Laden and company, they believe that they've got an ummah, don't they? An exemption from their religion to go out and do this in the name of
the
victims of the.
Bin Laden was proclaiming fatwas, which he had no business doing because he was not a cleric of any sort. He had not empowered theologically to issue, religious commands. I mean, Timothy McVeigh, who, when told about the nursery school that was destroyed in the Oklahoma City federal bombing, expressed no remorse, but a certain a kind of sorrow, in a way, that they had to be there at that time when the building had to be attacked. Almost as if he had nothing to do with it. It was almost as if there were great historical forces at work, a great confrontation that he was kind of privileged to be a part of as a soldier, but it wasn't really his doing. A jihadi might have said, this is the word of God. And that's exactly what, Bin Laden said, talking about the World Trade Center bombing. This is God's act, not ours, and we were privileged to take a part of it. But even Timothy McVeigh was not so pious, would say that, this had to happen, and I had to be there. And there was never any sense of personal responsibility, personal moral failing. He was simply carrying out what he thought was this extraordinarily important historical act in this great cosmic conflict that was beyond any kind of temporal imagination.
Right. Well, I'm afraid that we've run out of time, Mark, but it's just, again, the lethal combination that these losers can get any amount of firepower here in the United States with no questions asked. That's the part of it that I find extraordinary. I thank you for joining us.
Extraordinarily disturbing. Thank you so much, Ian. Good talking to you.
Good to talk to you. Again, I've been speaking with Mark Jurgensmeyer, the director of the Ophelia Center for Global and International Studies, a professor of sociology and professor of religious studies at the University of California, Santa Barbara. He's an expert on religious violence, conflict resolution, and South Asian religion and politics. And his most recently released book is Global Rebellion, Religious Challenges to the Secular State. And his bestseller was Terror in the Mind of God, The Global Rise of Religious Violence, which was based on interviews with religious activists around the world, including individuals convicted of the 1993 World Trade bombing, leaders of Hamas, and abortion clinic bombers in the United States. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking with two Sikh scholars about the Sikh religion. Amen.
Not 'cause things the same, because we lack the same color, and that's gray. Now that's May, can't burn his cross, 'cause he can't afford the gasoline. Now if a Muslim woman's trapped with a bomb on the bus, with the seconds running, give you the jitters. Just imagine an American-based Christian organization planning the poison water supplies to bring the second coming.